The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Signal Hour here with Evie.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone.
It's welcome. So good to be back here with everybody. So we've got a really big show for you. As always, every Wednesday is a pretty big show. This is the Signal Hour where we are trying to find the signal in the noise. And boy, do we have a lot of signal today for you. And this includes starting with something very near and dear to everybody's hearts, whether you rent or whether you own, one way or the other, you're paying the property taxes. It's usually buried in your rent or you're paying it directly as a homeowner, which means, honestly, you're renting from the local government either way. Try not paying your property taxes. Find out who actually owns your house. It's not you. Surprise.
Surprise.
Surprise. So that's where we're going to start today with this. And we're at the looting stage of this particular story. That's how I increasingly see it. You know, what I care about, what Evie cares about, what the two of us are caring about over here is we want everybody to be as resilient as possible because we think there is potentially some very disruptive times coming along. And by resilient, we don't just mean beans and bullets in the basement. Well, you could have those. We mean home, health, wealth, community. Those are the four big areas that we look at. And so your health, Evie, actually can include your spiritual health, your emotional health. Actually, it's the foundation of it all.
Yeah.
Right.
It absolutely is. If you don't have those things, you really don't have anything at all.
Nothing at all. Have all the beans and bullets and bunkers and bullion you want. But if you're going to fall apart.
Yeah. If you go crazy with stress. So it's important to work on that every day.
Every day. Well, these are incredibly stressful times for a lot of people. And contributing to that is the fact that we're just treated like tax donkeys. We're slaves. If you're on blood pressure medication, this is your warning. Tune out now. You're not going to want to watch this part. You're just not going to. So I just released this on July 1st, today being the 2nd. So that would be yesterday. This really important interview, a second one I've done with Mitch Vexler out of Texas, where he talks about how real estate taxes really are a gigantic Ponzi scheme. Okay. So it's gotten pretty bad at this point in time. So, I mean, what if I told you that property taxes are in every location that Mitch has studied so far, conducted fraudulently in terms of how the appraisal process is run? They operate actually indistinguishably from a massive Ponzi scheme. Sound hyperbolic? Well, it's actually not. So today I want to just cover very briefly the podcast with Mitch Vexler. You're going to hopefully go and watch it. You can watch it down there at that link. Just go to Peak Prosperity. It's free. Just go check it out. But he talks about how the appraisal processes, they violate the laws, right? The very laws that they're supposedly governed by. He uses simple math, right? And there's just no possible way that these school bonds are ever going to be paid back. Ever.
It's awful.
Ever. Okay. And so here's one of the tables he started with here. So Evie, what we're looking at here, he goes to independent, he's in Texas. So these are over here, way over here on the left. The issuer would be, say, the Aledo Independent School District, ISD.
Okay.
So Aledo, it's a town. It's a town of 31,000 people.
Okay.
9,500 students. $367 million of debt outstanding.
What? Are you kidding?
I'm totally not kidding.
For a school district?
Right? As if that was, when you divide all the households by that debt, it's as if each household had an additional $205,000 HELOC mortgage that had been slapped on top of it that nobody told them about. And if you were going to pay that back, and here he makes the assumption you're going to pay it back over 40 years at 6.5%, which is our fair terms, right? We could argue maybe you should pay it back in 10 years or five, in which case this would be a much worse thing. But imagine if every household has an additional monthly payment of $1,205. That's how you read this table. And it just goes on and on and on. And it gets worse and worse and worse. Right?
Oh, my God. And most people probably are not aware of this, correct?
Probably not. No, they're not aware. So yeah,
I'm probably jumping the gun. But who's going to be responsible for this ultimately? Where does this land?
Well, one of two things happens. They just continually roll these bonds. We'll see that more as we go on. We're gonna dial in and look at Portland, Oregon, because it's a crazy place. And we've got some friends there. You know, the Count MC, he lives there. He's one of our subscribers at Peak Prosperity. He's been recounting everything. And when I actually looked into it, and a good friend of mine, Steve, longtime climbing buddy, lives there. He's leaving. These successful people are fleeing now, and we're going to see why. But it's contained in this concept. Nice. Look at these bottom three down here, right? One, two, three. Nice. Collectively have an add up total 1.765 billion with a B.
Billion.
$1.76 billion of debt outstanding. And the median household income across these areas here averages like 30 to 50.
Yep.
How are you going to pay back? It's an impossible number. It's just, anyway.
And this is in Texas,
you think? This is Texas. But Mitch has looked at the same dynamic all over the place, right?
Wow, so, that's really bad.
Yeah, so carrying on, the disrespected trucker, not just, I just found this randomly on Twitter. Okay. This wasn't in response to anything we're talking about or the bitch thing.
Sure. The disrespected trucker says, my mom informed me that she paid for my grandma's property tax last year because Social Security doesn't pay her enough. She's 86 years old. Worked her whole life. End the property tax on seniors now. My mom is 68 herself. Enough is enough of this corrupt government screwing over people who've contributed to society their whole lives. Yet they want to give illegals endless benefits. That's not treason. I don't know what is.
Well, sure. And you know, okay, the illegals is just more salt on the wound, but let's back up.
Right.
What's the wound itself? The wound is, You work, and then you have to pay property taxes or you're going to lose your home to the point where you paid in the system.
Mm-hmm.
You're 86.
Right. And you have
your income. Social Security doesn't cover the nut.
No. And it doesn't increase ever, does it?
Not as fast as property taxes. Rebecca down there writes too.
Property tax is a scam and just a way to squeeze people out of homes they bought and paid for decades earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you could plan everything right.
Yep, do everything right.
You get to your fixed income stage of life, right?
Which
is when you receive your Social Security, and then you can no longer afford to stay in the house you bought and paid for because taxes.
Exactly to that. This gentleman right here, he's apparently, this guy is 84. Mitch actually knew him when I showed him this picture during the interview. Look at this. I built and paid for my house at age 25. Every 3 years now, he says, he pays property taxes equivalent to the original cost of my house. It takes 50% of my Social Security to pay my property taxes. So you pay into the system and the government says, oh, here's some Social Security back. But, you're going to have to pay taxes on that. And then the local government shows up and says, we'll take the rest of that. It's an absolute tax donkey scam. How do we put up with this? People threw tea in the harbor for way less than this once upon a time, right?
Yeah.
You know? So at any rate, it's just that bad.
That's insane.
Just that bad. Okay.
Wow.
So, all right, back to Portland though.
Yeah, this is infuriating.
Isn't it? But it's a tax on an unrealized gains, right? So right now they say, would we do a tax on unrealized gains on Bitcoin? You bought Bitcoin at a dollar, it's $100,000. So it's gained $99,999.
Right.
That's a gain. We should tax that. But if they tax that, you haven't realized it because you haven't sold it.
No. So then where do I get that money?
You'd have to sell your Bitcoin. If they, the same thing for stocks, a big hue and cry. Wall Street kicks up a freaking scream fest every time people say, maybe we should tax unrealized gains on stocks. It would create total nightmare in the markets.
Oh, yeah.
That's off limits. Everybody's like, that's a stupid idea. Well, how is it not stupid to tax unrealized gains on homes?
On property, yeah.
Because the homes only go up in price because the government overprints money and creates inflation. And then they're taxing you on the inflation they just created, which also makes the rest of your expenses go up. And so you're on this hamster wheel you can't get off of. And at the end of it, if you one stumble, one cancer you didn't plan on, one car accident that your insurance coverage denied, for whatever reason, because it was an illegal migrant with no insurance and it didn't cover it.
Just one disaster.
You get a vaccine injury that somehow they can't cover. Here's $1,400, I think, which is the average vaccine injury claim, right? Something happens. They're like, so sorry for your losses. Beat it. You're homeless.
Right.
Homeless.
Or you're working at Walmart welcoming people when you're 78 because you have to.
Yeah.
It's awful.
Yep.
Yeah,
so I think Sean O is speaking for a lot of people here.
Absolutely. Property taxes are my biggest financial fear as I head into retirement. Yep. That makes so much sense, Shano.
Yeah. And by the way, Australia, not to be outdone, says, hold my beer.
Australia is talking about doing unrealized gains on super funds, similar to your 401k.
So they have.
What?
They're talking about like,
no
oh,
way.
That's a nice retirement fund you have there. Sure would be a shame if we taxed it. It's just very bad. I'm going to laugh because this is tragically bad. Okay.
No, it is.
So carrying on, though, this is Portland, Oregon. Imagine you live there and you've dared to be successful. You have a, I don't know, you've got an S Corp or a business. You got a small business. By the way, if you're part of the parasite class, you make money with money. That means you're in the rentier class. That means you are a financier. You make money with money. You have the lowest taxes in here. But if you have your own business, you will get taxed at the highest rate. So look at this. You live in Portland, Oregon. First of all, Oregon has a personal income tax at 9.9%. And then there might be a corporate income. If you have your corporation as an S Corp, it's 7.6. Then there's a preschool tax for all. Evie, did you know this? They tax only above a certain income level. It starts at $125,000 for an individual, which is, you know, you can live in a city on $125,000 and barely scrape by. But anyway, that's rich in Portland terms.
Yeah.
Now you have to pay a tax of 3% for people, other people's kids to have childcare.
Oh my gosh.
3%. Okay. Then there's the corporate activity tax. Isn't that a corporate income tax? Don't my activities result in income?
Yeah, what even is that?
I don't even know.
Doesn't make sense.
Then you have a business license tax, and then a business income tax, whatever that is, separate from the corporate tax. Then there's a supportive housing services tax, a clean energy surcharge.
This is like looking at a cell phone bill.
Yeah, a TriMet transit tax, an Oregon transit tax, and they forgot the art tax, which is $35. Anyway, add it all up, and you could be paying up to 57.62%.
No way.
To your federal, state, municipal governments. 57%.
That's awful. How do people do it?
How do people do this?
How does anybody live there?
Oh, take that. So now people can see. I actually accidentally left that comment up. But look at that, 57%. How?
Wow.
Okay. As I wrote, I put this in the piece at the site. I said, that's capitalism for your expenses. Those are yours. You know, any expenses you have, like you're going to have to pay for college.
Yeah.
Healthcare, insurance, roof repairs, everything. Capitalism for your expenses, but socialism for your income.
Oh,
we're going to need that income.
Such a good quote.
It's the worst of all worlds.
Did you make that up?
I did.
That's from your brain. It's excellent.
Well,
that's
it's
exactly
just
how it seems, you know?
Yeah.
Holy moly.
You know, one of the great mysteries in life, Evie, is that a lot of people have been moving to Florida. Let's see if we can find out why.
Okay.
In Portland, Oregon. You might spend 21.62% on your S Corp partnership or LLC
versus zero.
A big fat goose egg. Oh, I think we've answered the question.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Of course, those would all be all the right wing.
Yep.
You know, the people they're constantly bashing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So,
boy.
So, at any rate, Mitch, who I just interviewed, that's Mitch. He is a property developer. He's from Canada. He lives down in Texas now, has for a long time. He's a lawyer. Very legally astute. Anyway, he's been like a dog on a bone. Honestly, Evie, I'm a little surprised he's still alive. He is scoring so many sacred oxen with this, pointing out that this is a giant scam. This touches state pensions, you know, like, oh, I just found out, and it didn't make it into this presentation, that in Oregon, they have an automatic, if you're a state worker and you're in a pension, a guaranteed 8% per year return on your money, regardless of how the markets turn out.
How did they fulfill that? It's taxpayers that do it.
So 8%. 8% is like, well, you know, it's not that fair. Stocks do 10% long term. No. Nobody goes up and down. Like,
no.
8% means that roughly every 9 years, whatever you put in has doubled. Guaranteed.
Oh, my gosh.
By the taxpayers. Anyway, all being paid for by.
Wow. Give us a little background about him, if you would, for just a quick second. Like, how did he get into finding out this information?
Mitch got into this the same way I got into the crash course, enlightened self-interest. He had a building that was supposed to be valued in a certain way, right? Because it was a commercial building. And so there's commercial valuations for appraisals and then residential. Residential is supposed to be sort of like a comprehensive, here's what all properties are valued at. But commercial is supposed to be based on its revenues.
Right.
So he has this building and they doubled the valuation or something like that. And he said, hold up, you didn't look at any of my financials. I can show you that this is the same storefront it was.
Right.
And nothing's changed. So then he looked into how they're supposed to do it and found that there are laws. US PAP, USPAP, it defines how professional appraisers are supposed to do this stuff. Okay. They have all these things,
like comparables and
formulas and standard deviations and per square footage. There's all this formula. So he goes in and he's like, how did you value this? And they wouldn't tell him. So he downloaded a spreadsheet, which he was able to do. He had to FOIA it out. So he downloads this spreadsheet for the county and found out that they just took everybody across the board and dialed it up 7%. And wouldn't you know it, that's how much the town budget went up that year.
That's illegal.
Yeah, totally illegal. He uncovered massive fraud.
Oh my gosh.
It's totally fraudulent.
That's why you're like, he shouldn't be alive.
No, he shouldn't. Because we're talking billions and billions and billions of dollars at stake here. Okay. All right. Anyway, let's, in his own words, let's listen up what he says here.
You must understand that the laws are being broken and you, mom and pop, are paying for. The laws do exist. They've chosen, which is the word intent. They have chosen to intentionally defraud the public to support something that should never have existed from day one. The school system has failed. Go and look at the education levels of any school in the United States. They're getting an F. Mm-hmm. They're literally failing right in front of you. And yet, while we need more money to continue the failing, I mean, none of this stacks. But the point of the matter is, if your outstanding fraudulent school district bond debt is even 10% of the value of your home, do you realize that that 10% in 30 years turns into 30%? It's just the math. You should not have to pay anything to support a school. It must come out of the sales tax, which is totally transparent. There is no other solution.
So what he's proposing, I actually really love, and he's gotten good traction in Texas, but of course it got buried under legislative
gobbledygook.
But he said, look, instead of having an income tax and a property tax, which he believes is illegal, right? Because the only thing governments are supposed to be able to tax is income. Well, your house that goes up in value isn't income. It's not cash flow. Income means income. It's income. It's flow, cash flow.
Right, right.
So anyway,
something's moving.
Yeah, we went off the rails. We did all that, but he says that if Texas rammed its sales tax up to 15%, which is currently at like 5% or something, then they can drop all property taxes. No more 86-year-olds being taxed out of house and home.
Wow.
Right? But you're like, oh, 15%, that's like a European VAT tax. Sounds terrible. But then think about what happens, Evie. So now you or I have the decision. Do I want to consume or do I want to save?
Right. And you don't get penalized for saving.
No, you save or you consume, right? And if I consume, I pay a tax on that. So my choice, right? If I want to be one of these billionaires and send up my silicone girlfriend into space on a big thing and, you know, then invite all of my best friends from all the private jets. If those people want, whoever wants to consume and you pay a tax on that.
Right.
Right.
That
so it's actually a very fair system. I love the idea behind it.
Mm-hmm. I hope it gets more traction. That should be the standard.
It should be. It's a great idea. But let's go to Portland now. Let's look at Portland's unending spending spree.
Portland voters, according to, I guess this is what, Google?
Yeah, AI.
Approved a nearly $1.83 billion school construction bond measure in the May 2025 election. The bond will fund building improvements, health and safety upgrades, and new technology for Portland public schools. Specifically, it will allow for the modernization of three high schools, renovation at elementary and middle schools, and address health and safety concerns across the district.
Now, okay. All right. But so this is $1.83 billion in 2025, but they had just passed $1.2 billion in 2020.
Yeah. What is that?
And $790 million in 2017.
Yeah. Let me read that.
So we don't need to read it. It's just, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. No. Here's where I want to go with it.
Because
we're gonna dial in just because I need examples for this stuff to sort of land on me.
All right, good.
All right, so that 2020 they raised $1.2 billion. What'd they do with it?
Yeah.
Okay. One of the things they did was they refurbished McDaniel High School. Okay.
Okay.
All right. And you can read that down there then.
Yeah. The renovation of McDaniel High School, formerly Madison High School in Portland, cost approximately $240 million.
A quarter of $1 billion. $240 million because some precious students needed solar panels on there. But hold on. Problem. Here's problem. It costs a metric ton per square foot to build public schools. Would you look at that? $295 to $756 per square foot. So you know what they do, Evie? You know what?
What?
If it costs that much to build per square foot, you know what you do? You maximize the number of square feet when you build.
Whoa. Look at this high ceiling.
This is McDaniel. Look at all that. Like, nobody's getting educated, having to walk all that distance back and forth.
Yeah,
and
right.
Sit on the little special seating area right there.
Wow.
Big tar windows just exuding heat into the winter air and bringing heat in during the summer months. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, maybe that's just an unfortunate shot. Yeah, you know, maybe it's, here's a random seating area, community partners area.
Wow.
Look at this. I mean, like, if this is like,
I'd never had a school like that.
I never went to school like this.
I was in
either.
Like a school that looked like a prison cell. It had like the concrete blocks.
Yes.
You know,
where you could see the little, like the lines
the
seam. On
the, yeah, the seam. You could trace it as you walked along.
Yeah. Put your finger in the seam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. for the concrete block pointing. I went to the same school.
Yep.
Now this is what it takes to get educated. You need this kind of conducive learning environment, right? But ultimately, you know what this is? This is construction companies getting feasting. $1,000 a square foot is what this renovation cost them. $1,000. I thought that's a Taj Mahal. Like, well,
yeah,
it kind of is, right?
I get you.
But and you know how it is. It's not possible, Evie, that you could, because you did a lot of performing. So you know it would be impossible for you to just stand up on a soapbox in a park and get your fiddle out or something and perform. Nope. This is what the McDaniel, this is their high school.
Wow.
You know, stage play area. It's got the latest, by the way. I checked out the rack and lighting and everything.
Amazing.
It's like a super pro. Like, this is Broadway.
Yeah, look at all the sound reflecting.
Remember, we just went to this play recently, and it was in this shitty little, like, falling apart, like
wicked old theater.
Yeah, take out like your, like, it was like full stackable chairs, like kind of a thing.
Yep.
The ceiling's like got like things hanging off it because it's degrading.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fancy right there.
So I hope
that's
these
fancy.
I hope these high school students realize that when they leave this, they'll never see a place this good again.
Ever.
When they go into community production, they're going to be in a shitty little place. and speaking of which, I wonder how many of these precious students are going to be professional football players or track stars.
Wow.
Hopefully all of them, because
that's incredible.
Yeah.
No wonder it costs so much.
Well, I hate to tell you this, but that was then. This is now. So they just, that $1.8 billion, they're only planning to refurbish three high schools or build three. So they're going to spend they're projecting $475 million per school building now.
What?
Half a billion.
Per building?
Yep. And everybody's expected to pay for this. And this is the conceit. I hate this. It's this whole idea is like, oh, but think of the children. They always default to this. Oh, but you don't care about educating our children? Dude, this has nothing to do with educating your precious little child.
You can
nothing.
Educate children at home, outside, running around in the woods for practically $0.
Correct.
And they turn out better than ever.
We homeschooled our children and they turned out, they're fantastic. And it required none of this largesse, right?
That's insane.
Imagine that we need all this. As you said earlier, I think you put it really well. It's like the only reason you would need this level of institutional largesse is because you suck as a teacher and it's covering up for your incapacity as a human.
It's true.
To actually educate.
If you need so many props that you know, this is the cost and that's your budget, then something's wrong.
Yep. And so it might even be worse than this.
World in Motion says, why am I paying other people's education bills?
So one of the things that Mitch points out is that it's not only that, but that the federal government gives more as a kickback if it turns out you have minorities, what do they call minority students? So the schools just tell them how many minority students they have. And he's like, they don't even match. The numbers don't even remotely line up. So taxpayers pay extra money into these school districts.
They lie about it?
Yeah.
Too?
And then also illegal migrants, particularly in places like Portland, get like the school, if they have an illegal migrant in there, they will still bill the taxpayers $38,000 a student. Because that's what it costs. But they don't actually know how much it really costs to educate a student because they don't actually know. They just submit these massive budgets and school and people float billion-dollar bonds and everybody has to pay for it. And it goes on until it absolutely breaks.
Yeah. So how many of these children that are in there right now or about to be in there are going to be saddled with ridiculous levels of debt that they will never, ever, ever have anything of their own?
Well, all of them, because, you know, as Mitch says, this is the great Ponzi scheme he talks about. None of this ever gets paid back. So they're not going to pay back that $1.8 billion. There's going to be another bond offering where they're going to have to roll in that $1.8 plus the next bond offering.
Every year?
They just roll it. Now, this raises the interesting part about this, which is that whoever's buying those bonds, because it may be that your portfolio advisor has said, oh, we got some great Portland school muni bonds, can't fail. And so they sell. So what happens is somebody like Goldman Sachs, et cetera, comes along, packages up, sells those $1.8 billion out to a first layer of what I'll call salespeople, who then dump them into various portfolios of pension funds, municipal do this and that portfolios. It's such like these things, any fiduciary scratching at this paint will hit primer right away, and you realize there's no way they're getting paid back. So nobody should ever be touching these things.
Yes, absolutely.
But they trade at just about parity with everything else.
Everything else in the government that we've found out this last year, you know, there's just so much.
I'm getting that 2008 feeling all over again.
Oh gosh.
You know, aren't we all?
God forbid.
Okay, let's carry on. Another short clip from Mitch here. The math just ain't mathing.
But you talk about these pensions. Illinois, there's not enough money on this planet to fix Illinois. It's beyond repair. And Texas has got one advantage at the moment, which is its population is growing. But you can go to Oklahoma? Nope, not happening. Arkansas? Not happening. So if they don't deal with this head on and simply say, okay, fine, this $5.1 trillion is going to be vacated. We are going to reverse this and those people are going to lose. That's how you deal with it. But they're going to lose eventually anyway. My point is that the compound cumulative effect of the interest is clicking by the nanosecond. Like if you go to usdebtclock.org, what's happening on the school district level is the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. By the nanosecond, this interest continues. There's no way to pay off the principal. So you may as well call a spade. Mm-hmm. And if you have to start putting these school districts into involuntary bankruptcy, do it. There isn't a judge on the planet that can argue with you. They'll say, well, no, we don't want to hear the case. It isn't going to change the math. And the truth is that the math is much bigger than the courts. Mm-hmm. The math is much bigger than the federal government. This is going to blow to shreds if they do not get involved and say, that's it, enough. These people here that invested in these bonds, you're going to lose this portion of your portfolio.
Wow.
Don't mention the pensions. No, the math doesn't math. And so I first met Mitch because I was speaking at a conference called Limitless, which is coming up at the end of July in Dallas, Texas. And my good friend Ken McElroy runs that, our friend. Mm-hmm. And it's a great conference. Anyway, I showed my thing where I showed total credit market debt in the U.S. compared to GDP. And the two lines are diverging. And Mitch came running up afterwards. He says, I have that same chart. But for this county in Texas, it's a fractal problem where we collectively as a nation are just piling up the debts at a much faster rate than incomes are going up. It's a conceit to say, you know, we can pay for these school bonds because look how much house prices have gone up. If the house prices are being revalued 30% higher, but people's incomes only went up 4%, which is national average, then you have a math problem on your hands. The math ain't mathing. So that's what he's been pointing out here. It's going to blow. $5.1 trillion is
that's
the size
insane.
Of this.
Insane. What about our state? I'm curious.
we're in bad shape, too.
Are we in bad shape?
Yeah, not. It's kind of different. We saddle the debt sort of at the state level. It's we're in bad shape.
We're screwed.
Everybody's screwed.
I mean, something you'd want to, you know, take into account before you move to a certain area?
Of course. A lot of people are. You have to add that up. I mean, a lot of people are reporting now that that they literally can't, they have to move because they cannot afford the property taxes where they are.
Oh, it's awful.
Right. I saw it like there's, in particularly the blue states, we really like crush ourselves badly, Portland, but New Jersey, I was reading about a person whose home they bought back in the day, 40 years ago, their property taxes now are 100% of what their house was when they first bought it.
govern like me harder, 25, daddy.
30, govern me harder, $30,000 property tax bills, right? It's just awful. Before we go to this next section, we are going to take a quick break and hear from, of course, one of my favorite sponsors here. And we'll be talking about something that's really actually very important, which is our summit this year. So tune in. We'll be right back after this to talk about more important signals. Hi, I'm Chris Martinson, and I am thrilled to invite you to Peak Prosperity's exclusive in-person summit happening this September 12th, 13th, and 14th at Lake Winnipesaukee, New Hampshire. At this once-a-year in-person gathering, we take over the entire facility, which offers incredible privacy. And we offer incredible lectures, interactive content, and plenty of opportunity to settle in and allow free-thinking folks like you to come together and to connect, share ideas, and build real community. It's become something of a healthy family gathering, the one you always wanted to have. At Peak Prosperity, we speak the truth when the rest of the world seems committed to ignorance, if not outright lies. So this isn't just another event. It is a unique chance to join and get to know a select group of like-minded people who value clarity and courage, knowing what the future holds, and most importantly, how to make their families more resilient and prepared along every dimension. Spots are limited and we sell out every year. So if you're ready to dive deep, make meaningful connections, join the family, then come grab your tickets now at peakprosperity.com. Select a ticket plus any extras that you may need, such as a second ticket for a guest or upgraded lodging by filling out the simple form. It's that easy. The Peak Prosperity Annual Summit. Don't miss this once-a-year gathering. Evie and I would love to meet you.
And welcome back to our Signal Hour this afternoon. Thank you for joining us. We do hope that you would come and join us up in New Hampshire this year. It's going to be September 12th through 14th. And if you're able to make it, it is such a fantastic event. We have a great time, don't we, Chris? We get to know people personally, meet you in person. It's an opportunity for you to also meet other fantastic individuals who are drawn to seeing the truth about what's going on in our world and how to make their lives and their children's lives and everybody around them healthier and more resilient. And so do come if you can. It would be great.
Well, and we don't have a green room. We're like fully available the whole time.
We are.
You know, it's just.
Yep. It's a small little campus. It's very intimate.
Well, we want to meet everybody. This year, you know, you and I, Evie, we've been doing a lot locally because we're both convinced that the story becomes very local at some point in time, right? The local property taxes obviously is an issue. You know, you and I have started to get involved in our local politics, which is really important. Good people there, but very few of them are actually rolling up their sleeves and trying to help. You know, most people just hope for the best, but I don't think we can just sit back and hope for the best anymore.
No, and we need to gather ourselves together because, you know, I think the towns or the places or the communities that are going to do the best are people that have gathered together with that in mind, that understand what we're facing in our future and aren't just going to sit back and sort of.
Well, I agree. So I
participate.
I have a new segment for people this time. Let's see how people like it. We're going to take a quick resilience break. You ready?
Yeah. Let's go.
All right. So I put together a few things here. Do you remember our first year here on the farm?
I do.
So it was 2020. Right.
Things were crazy.
We
COVID.
Got cows. We never had cows before. We
COVID
just like
happened right as we were moving here.
Yeah. COVID plus cows plus a drought. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do remember.
You remember?
That.
So that's a picture of our first year in the field.
No.
Do you remember
that?
Was
that really what our grass looked like?
Yeah.
Our pasture?
Well, one part. I mean, but that's particularly nasty. Then we were feeding cows on that. Oh, so
we
bad. Anyway.
So
here, let's see if we can remember together. Hey, everybody, it's July 1st, 2020, and Evie and I are out walking the field and you know, mixed emotions. It's really in poor shape and a lot. I mean, really, I know it looks beautiful, but if you really get in there and start looking at it, you can see the damage. So it's been a dry spring, no question about it. And this is a sandy field, so certainly we're seeing some water damage and stress, but it shouldn't be this stressed. and it should easily be surviving much better than it is. But let's just take a look at what we're seeing. Because, by the way, this is all going to change. This is before we've done anything. This is before the cows are showing up in 2 days on the
we're
3rd.
A little nervous
about that. We don't know if
a lot nervous.
Be really supportive of them. We hope it is. The cows are going to help us turn this into a better field over time, obviously. You know, that's what they do. And we're going to put on some really good cover cropping. So we're investigating all of that. And we mean something like 12 different species of things, sunflower.
That didn't really work out, did it?
No.
No, we tried. None of our seeds took.
Quack grass.
But to sorghum too.
Yeah.
Chicory.
Because,
why?
Why? Because we want to invest in our soil health.
Soil health.
We have healthy soil. That's the best asset we could possibly have.
So very quickly, but that's what we are now. We're soil farmers, right? We're just trying to get the soil up.
Yeah, we are.
Soil. If the soil's good, everything else will take care of it.
That's right.
Take care of itself.
Wow, look how yellow it is.
Oh, just wait. I point the camera to the ground.
So let's look at what we're looking at when we say not so good. So as we walk along here, I think you can see.
It's crunching.
Look how thin this is. Ugh. And there's a lot of thatch down here. But there's really nothing sprouting under there. This is very thin. Look at this. Very, very
yellow.
Thin. How does it smell?
It's sour. It's a sour smell. I mean, even the weeds are doing badly. Look at this poor. It's yellow.
The sink foil.
The sink foil is all yellow.
Black-eyed Susan's like, nope.
Black-eyed Susans have just died. There's one lonely black-eyed Susan.
But to your credit, we also mowed.
Do you remember?
Oh.
Do you remember?
I do. It was terrifying that first year trying to feed animals on that.
All right. So since then, we've limed the field twice. We've fertilized a few times because we were deficient. We got special fertilizer mixes, we did soil testing. So we were deficient NPK. Obviously, we needed more K than N and P. And also we were deficient boron and zinc and sulfur.
Yeah. And so, partly because I think it's so well drained here because we live on a river sort of delta. I don't know what you'd want to what you call it.
Yeah.
But oh man, that's terrible.
So you remember? And this is with us. I think we were irrigating at this point in time, right?
Oh yeah.
But this is like I tried to make it look like we had real grass, but look at all those yellow brown tips down there.
Yeah.
And that's Cinnamon and Red, who both went to the freezer.
They went to freezer
first. But look how bad that is.
Oh, it's awful.
Get a moth. Yay. All right. So that's then. This is today. Here I am, unshaven.
Okay, now let's take a quick peek at our field here in July of 2025. A lot wetter year than what we're comparing to in 2020, but still, this the vast improvement. So here we are.
Oh, that looks so much better.
This is, obviously, we'd have to get way down to get down in there, but let's see what we see all the way down in here, because you'll notice what we have down here. This. See this? Got the crumbles. I mean, it's still dryish, because it hasn't rained a lot just lately, but anywhere we dig down in here now, we do notice if we go in far enough, see, we have crumbles now. This is actual soil structure. See, it's got the crumbles.
It holds together.
That means that we've got healthy activity going on down there. There's worm castings. There's all kinds of stuff down there. And this is what it looks like now, after just a few years of active soil management.
Mm-hmm. Mob grazing.
By those things under the trees way back over there.
Can't even see them. There's cows over there. All right, but this raises several important points. One, this is year five. We planned it was going to take 7 years to get our soil from ruined. It was really in bad shape.
Right.
Up to non-ruined.
Right. And ruined because there were people that hate it over and over again and didn't replenish the field with any other biological components.
Every time you take a ton of hay off, you're taking 50 pounds of nitrogen, 50 pounds of phosphorus, 50 pounds of potassium, and you have to put those back on.
You do.
Or they just go away.
Or the math doesn't math.
The math doesn't math.
Yep.
But the reason that I wanted to show people this was to say this is what we're really up to is becoming resilient. It's about the soil and that it takes time. So
it
that's
really
why I just need people to know we're running out of time in this story. Now, the part that
actually terrifies Evie and I is that as much as we're doing, we live in a very rural part of Massachusetts, and there's not a lot of agriculture going on around us. There's a blueberry farm up the hill. There's a dairy farm. There's a couple of, but not a lot, right? It's more hilly. We're not a big ag area. We don't wake up in the morning smelling that wafting pesticide smell or anything like that.
Thank goodness.
But we don't have any bees this year, like zero. Well, we have two bumblebees. Literally, I know them by name, but we're out. We have no little minor bees. Our fruit didn't set this year because there just wasn't enough pollination. Evie was out hand pollinating. And this is what's happening to us in a very rural area. This insect apocalypse, particularly the pollinator collapse that we're seeing in a rural area that doesn't have the usual reasons like, oh, you must have bees. You know, if I was in Iowa and I was surrounded by farms spraying in on every quadrant, I could make sense of it. But what's happening in Massachusetts? Where'd they go?
Know.
It's like the rapture happened, but it took the bees.
I mean, a lot of people surmise that maybe it's, you know, the cell towers and all the, we're all bathed in, you know.
Could be.
All these waves of things that probably disturb the bees. I mean, they're very sensitive.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was terrifying this spring to see how few we had. And we have tons of we plant all sorts of native things. We have a huge orchard, you know, blueberry bushes, raspberries, blackberries, flowers, you name it. And you know, lilacs that have been here for 30 years. So it's not like they were planted when, you know, a lot of plants that you get at a regular box store could have neonicotinoids in them to begin with. Yeah. And then it takes several years for those to be to come out if they ever do. So, yeah, it's frustrating.
It sure is.
We'll keep going, though.
All right. Evie, we're going to turn now to, and that's, we'll have a little resilience thing. We can show people our chickens next time, and maybe our garden or
the, let's do a little piece every
favorite,
time.
The
Let
grapes,
us know if you enjoy that.
The sawmill, whatever. But here we are, and we're busy trying to make sense of the world in no small measure because we're surrounded by demons now, and we have to talk about this. This is probably the most explosive thing. You know how important this is because the New York Times didn't report on it at all. This is really astonishingly bad. And this is just a 1 minute clip that comes to us off of a recent interview between Tucker Carlson and RFK Jr. And RFK brings his usual truth bombs. So let me get that going.
What you would do if you wanted to find the answer, which is to compare outcomes in a fully vaccinated group to health outcomes in an unvaccinated group. And CDC did that study in 1999. They brought in a team of scientists under a Belgian researcher named Thomas Verstraten, and they looked at the data. They looked at children who had received the hepatitis vaccine within the first 30 days of life and compared those children to children who had received the vaccine later or not at all. And they found an 1,135% elevated risk of autism among the vaccinated children. And it shocked them. They kept the study secret, and they manipulated it through five different iterations to try to bury the link. And, you know, we know how they did it. They got rid of all the older children, essentially, and just had younger children who are too young to be diagnosed. And they stratified the data, and they did a lot of other tricks. And all of those studies were the subject of those kind of that kind of trickery.
So what they did here was they got this really bad data. And so they went to this hotel and they sat down with all their key scientists and pharma reps and everything, said, what do we do?
And they had there was proof of this meeting, right?
Yes, the Sandalwood Hotel called the Sandalwood Meetings. And they destroyed as much as they could, but apparently some records still exist. So one thing I wish that RFK would do is name names. Mm. I need to know exactly who these people are.
Right. Who was at that meeting?
You know, exactly who made these decisions. But they said, oh, we have this really bad data. What do we do? So he said they started stratifying it. So they started looking for places they could just peer in a tiny crevice of the data and not see the signal they were looking for. So they had to exclude older children because that's when you finally get diagnosed with autism. So if you only have kids who are three and under, it's harder to diagnose a language malformation in a two-year-old than a 12-year-old.
Or behavioral things or whatever. Yeah.
So that's what they did. They specifically hid it and then gaslit us for years and said it's not a thing. But then specifically, we showed it last time, the ACIP meeting, where they voted, ha, 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 do you have any data? No, ha, ha. Unanimous vote to put the Hep B vaccine into infants. Mm. newborn infants who do not have an immune system yet can, even if you gave them a perfect vaccine, mm-hmm. what is their immune system going to do with it? It's not online yet. That's why you have the colostrum and has it from the mother and has all the antibodies, because you're basically have to
first externally year is like not
you're a naive, you're a blank slate. You got to get that thing up and running. So the question is, why would they not just say, and by the way, Hep B happens to people who have promiscuous sexual lives, right?
Right. And dirty needles.
And dirty needles. Yeah. So like, blood
transfusions.
But what if a mother had those behaviors? Like, well, then test the mothers. And if they happen to have Hep B,
right.
Have Hep B, then maybe consider it. Mm-hmm. But that's only 0.8% of the population, a pregnant population. Instead, they're going to vaccinate 100% of the babies. And this is what they decided to do after having this data in hand.
This is just
that's
outrageous.
Who we're dealing with here.
This is just insane.
And by the way, I found out recently from the person who manages the YouTube side of this account. You might be listening to this at Peak Prosperity on Rumble, on Twitter, X. But on YouTube, we have received 11 strikes over our past 12 signal hours.
Thanks,
strikes.
Google.
Because I keep saying stuff like this. We keep saying stuff like this. And mm-hmm. somebody complains. It's some pharma troll. You know who you are. If you're listening to me right now in your little cubicle with your little demon hair on fire, good for you. But you are a monster. And I will not stop saying what I'm going to say, because this is just unacceptable. Full stop. 100%. This
is absolutely.
Unacceptable. Unacceptable.
You need to call it out for what it is.
All right. So we know all of this, right? And so I think RFK did this, which is just that first top line. We don't have to read all that junk, but this, you know,
sure. HHS takes bold step to restore public trust in vaccines by reconstituting ACIP.
Now, reconstituting is a fun word, because in this instance, it means he fired all their butts, 100% fired them all. And he started over. And Robert Malone, who we both know, is now co-chair of that. And Martin Kulldorff, these are solid scientists, and they're asking real questions. Yep. It's going to take a little time to get through it, but they're making great progress, I think.
That's great.
Now, all of this has sent pharma into a complete panic.
Have they? I'm sure.
They have a main lobbying arm called Bio. Okay. And Jeffrey Tucker, our good friend, is writing this up here.
He says, this remarkable memo apparently leaked from Big Pharma presents a clever scheme to stop RFK, divide MAHA, drive a wedge between MAGA and MAHA, fund influencers among reputational conservatives, and clear the path for retaining power. By the way, the fund influencers among reputational conservatives, like Candace Owens has been experiencing this, where they just reach out. Somebody somewhere from an organization like this reaches out to influencers, offers to pay them money, like up to $2,000 to slander somebody mm-hmm. online on their TikTok or their whatever they have.
It's a full information battle right now.
Oh, it's so bad.
It's bad. Anyhow. All right. Yeah. So,
Brownstone.
So that's part of it. So I highlighted the word apparently because, and I trust Brownstone and they're great journalistic, all this and that, but we have to trust that this is an actual leaked document. Now it smells real and authentic to me, but keep the caveat on there. Okay. Just in case. Mm-hmm. But if true, here's what we're dealing with. So
in the political landscape, widespread concern over RFK Jr.'s anti-vaccine stance. Members view him as a direct threat to public health. Okay. So this is the meeting that they had.
This is their executive summary. Key highlights. This is from their meeting, April 3rd, 2025. Right. But they say, widespread concern. That's what they always say when they don't say, here are the three people we know personally who are concerned. Widespread concern. We're all concerned. Reasonable people are all concerned about his anti-vaccine stance, even though every single time he's been very careful to say, I'm going by the data. Mm-hmm. Do we have that data? If we have the data, we'll go with the data. We do not have the data. So he's been all about the data. But to these demons, anything that is actual science represents an enormous threat to them. And what you're going to see as Evie reads through a lot is at no point in time do they represent, have any concern whatsoever about their products being harmful. What they care about is everything else. So he's a direct threat to public health. Widespread concern. It's just,
And speculation about the Trump RFK Jr. alliance with potential for breakdown over conflicting interests.
Oh, potential for breakdown. This is it. So they're going to try and drive a wedge between Trump and RFK. Mm-hmm. It's part of their strategy.
Yep.
They're going to pay influencers $2,000 to start saying, sure looks like RFK is throwing Trump under the bus, anything they can do to try and create this sense of breakdown.
It's awful.
So this is, but this is how they operate, right?
And it is. Yeah. It is. Apparently they think Dr. Oz is a potential voice of reason on public health within the current administration.
Because he's the only one who hasn't like said anything negative about them. Because everybody who looks at the data is like, geez, this is bad.
And then they decided that Senator Cassidy was emerging as an influential advocate for CDC and public health engagement. And AEI and former Senator Richard Burr seen as an important conservative ally in vaccine advocacy.
So the AEI, right? So this is what like one of the top conservative think tanks out there. But you know who sits on
stands for?
The American Enterprise Institute or something like that. But anyway, you know who's on there right now?
No.
You might have got that wrong, but I think that's right. Scott Gottlieb, former FDA commissioner, Pfizer.
He's a shill.
Total shill. So anyway, Cassidy's a shill. Burr's a shill. They're just ridiculous pharma shills. That's it. That's the whole landscape. So they're like, oh, well, but look at the panic in here. So like political landscape, like this is terrible. We're losing our vaccine thing, right?
Right.
So this is bio. Bio is supposed to be this amalgam for all biologicals. So this could be biotech companies, pharma companies. But what they should be talking about is here are big opportunities to advance actual better lives for people,
right?
Cure diseases,
right? To use science to do positive things.
Here's what we're going to do. Here we're going to tell you know what, they're focusing on too much of the negative. Here are all our positives. Let's focus on these.
Yeah,
right.
They could do that.
This is, you can just feel it. It's all negative. We're going to break this down and do this, and we'll have to find our few allies in here.
That's insane.
Anyway,
oh boy. So
they're
going to
restore it. Start with the top.
They're going to restore public trust by installing pharma insiders who worry most about the money, of course.
Look at the co-chairs.
Their new chairs, Sylvia Taylor from Novavax and Art Hurt from Merck.
Yay! Great. Trust restored right away.
There it is. Emphasis on governance, restructure, AEI relationship building, and defining 2025 vaccine strategy.
There it is. Vaccine strategy. Where's the promoting big health? Like, we're going to have to redefine our 2025 vaccine strategy. Like, that's the goals.
That's all that health is the goals. To them.
Yeah. And look at that third bullet point under goals. This is a goal.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Strategy centered on continuity, innovation access, and restoring public trust.
Innovation access. First off, that's one of those consultant words. Nobody even knows what that phrase means. Nobody knows.
Okay. I thought it was just
you mean. Say that, you just blah, you throw it out there.
Makes it sound, you fluffs.
Fluffs. Restoring public trust. You know how we're going to restore public trust? We're going to put a couple of deep insiders at the chair of this thing.
Right.
And then we're going to see if we can get some fractures going, maybe break some things up and
break some relationships. And...
But look at the investor and market challenges here, eh?
Oh my goodness.
Just
vaccine development viewed as unpredictable and politicized, goalposts are constantly shifting.
Yeah, those goalposts are. Can you guys get some data for us finally? Well, that's like moving the goalposts rather suddenly on us there, making us having to prove that these things are safe and effective. That's a big goalpost shift. We're not ready for that.
You're right. Investor confidence shaken. Limited capital access for the next 6 to 9 months. So they're running out of money. Is that what that means?
No viable capital raising opportunities. Money, money, money. That's how we're going to, that's okay. So this is where it gets bad. I'll read this part here. So Jeff Childers, if you're not reading Jeff Childers, you really have to.
He's so good.
Coffee and COVID, you see down here, I'm going to steal liberally from this because he wrote about the same thing that we were just looking at here. And he said, quote, the bio executives are morons, clueless, witless, whatever you want to call it. The memo exposed their hubristic downfall, the complete failure to engage with their industry's singular point of weakness, safety and efficacy. The hubris is inevitably followed by nemesis. They incorrectly identified RFK as nemesis and failed to read the national room. RFK is a symptom of their disease. It's not the cause. Bio's memo revealed not just strategic failure, but a kind of institutional narcissism. They're not thinking clearly because they still believe the problem is you and me and RFK and misinformation, not the mountain of corpses beneath their collapsing slogan. Safe and effective. By the way, the phrase safe and effective or anything like it appeared nowhere in the memo. I interpreted that as a quiet, maybe even subconscious recognition that the slogan has now become a sarcastic punchline. But wait until you see what they intend to replace safe and effective with. It's so deranged and clueless, it's almost parodic. It would be truly hilarious if they weren't so damnably dangerous. Now, are you ready? The bio executive's brain trust recommended focusing their new public vaccine messaging on national security.
Oh, of course they did. Wow, what a surprise.
Here it is. Look
You're
at this.
A danger to national security. Security. If you don't get the... Oh my gosh. Oh, gross. Well,
so the communications and messaging strategies, it's just so brilliant. I mean,
need to frame vaccine narrative around efficiency, transparency, and national security. Shift Bio's messaging regarding ACIP and FDA from defensive to proactive, from protect to and defend to optimize and enhance. Launch of the pro-vaccine campaign, Why We Vaccinate, to be tested in the Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah, because that's like a really fair test market right there. If it works in D.C., yeah. It'll work anywhere.
Of course. Why wouldn't it? Opportunities and threats. Okay, the threats they face are anti-vaccine rhetoric, tariffs, index pricing, weakened FDA capacity.
But opportunities. Now we get down to the meat of it.
Thank goodness. Leverage National Security Commission report. Onshore supply chains reposition vaccines as national security assets.
That's it. That's okay. This is what you're going to be hearing in the future. You're going to be hearing about vaccines as national security assets because these geniuses who are probably yanking down twice the salary you ever even dreamed of earning this amazing brain trust that they've brought to the table here are going to be repositioning vaccines as national security assets, not as things that save lives, not as things that make your lives better, that reduce illness, but as national security assets. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Jeff Childers again. He says, you really can't make this stuff up. We literally just emerged from a pandemic where the phrase national security in the context of public health became synonymous with gaslighting, censorship, secrecy, cover-ups, coercion, and buffoonist denials in the face of plain facts. Here it is in their own words again from the first page without a single reference to their Achilles heel, which is safety. Okay. National security. Those words, national security, ripple through the rest of the memo like a talking doll script. It's like they dug through the smoking wreckage of their credibility, held up the one remaining piece of debris still smoldering, and said, this will be our new flag.
That's great.
Isn't that great? I love how he writes.
Such good writing. P.S. If you're listening to this right now, do give us a thumbs up if you enjoy this video and consider subscribing to our channel. We are getting so shadow banned, and that is how they control our voices. Mm-hmm. So if you are interested in railing against that, as I am, then please give us a thumbs up and help share this with other people that you know so that we can get this message out to people who need it.
Yep. We're fighting the algos constantly here. So the bio crew, they're pining for the good old days. The good old days when you could get Piers Morgan to say this.
Back in the day. Love the idea of COVID vaccine passports for everywhere. Flights, restaurants, clubs, football, gyms, shops, etc. It's time COVID-denying anti-vaxxer loonies had their bullshit bluff called and bar themselves from going anywhere that responsible citizens go.
Yeah.
Wow. Pierce, that didn't age well.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to finish up with some Jeff Childers and we'll carry on. He says, good grief. I'm just a lawyer, not a branding consultant, but even I can come up with something better than repositioning vaccines as national security assets. Why not drive full bore into the mouth of the enemy and announce plans to prove once and for all, just once, how safe and effective their products are? Good question. Mm-hmm. They could trumpet voluntary new vaccine surveillance systems, loosen their death's grip on study data, pledge to protect children at all costs, promise better cooperation with the new ACIP, agree to stop marketing antidepressants to kindergartners, anything, something. But no, it's the worst rebranding since New Coke or since Budweiser slapped that effeminate crossdresser on its bottles. They're not just tone deaf. They're trying to remilitarize medicine, to invert the doctor-patient relationship into a compliance state dynamic. It won't work. It can't work. We all now know exactly what national security means. It means do what you're told, and don't ask any questions. In places safe and effective, we now offer you top secret and compulsory. You are welcome. It's literally the definition of biofascism, framing personal health choices as state security imperatives. And what's most guffaw-inducing is that Bio did it in a memo ostensibly about promoting trust.
That is guffaw inducing.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you for writing that up.
You're awesome.
It's so good. All right. So this is from deeper in the memo.
Okay.
And here they're getting down to what they actually, in just the yellow part, because I want to show this. Yeah.
So apparently the impact of the new administration, one of the things it says is Trump owed RFK Jr. for his support, but that loyalty may or may not last.
Mm. So how do we drive a wedge? So this comes out on April 3rd, which is why I think I now understand this part of the interview also with Tucker that came out just afterwards, because they're saying, we think we can break these two apart. Mm-hmm. And here, I see your offer, and here's RFK counteroffering with this.
President Trump does that. Whatever you think about him, there's a new feeling in America now that, you know, we're back on the upswing again. You know, as he says, the country is hot again, you know, and all around the world, people see that too. And, you know, a lot of things have surprised me about the president, because I, you know, bought into this fact that he was this one-dimensional character, that he was kind of a bombastic narcissist and all this. And, you know, and part of it is hearing it all the time on TV, but also, you know, the way that he conducts himself sometimes validates those. If you have that narrative, you can find things in what he does that validate that narrative. But what I've been surprised in getting to know him is what a kind of deep, multidimensional, and thoughtful character he is, and how well. I also thought, oh, he doesn't read, and, you know, he's not interested in anything. He's immensely curious, inquisitive, and immensely knowledgeable. He's encyclopedic in certain areas that you wouldn't expect, like music. And, you know, he gets very emotional about music. And,
yes.
And he has, and he knows the whole story behind every song.
Pavarotti and James Brown.
Yeah. He cries when he hears Pavarotti. Mm-hmm. He said to me one night when we were at Mar-a-Lago with the Amaryllis, he said, Amaryllis, you understand this, because she loves music too. And he said, but most of the people here, they don't understand it. They don't get it. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of sports, he's an encyclopedia. He knows everything. And then, you know, on Wall Street, he knows how everybody made their money and the stories. And he's, you know, an incredible raconteur about telling all these stories. And then and also the most surprising thing is, because I had him pegged as a narcissist, but narcissists are incapable of empathy. And he's one of the most empathetic people that I've met. You notice whenever he talks about the Ukraine war,
yes,
he always talks about the casualties on both sides. Every time he talks about it.
I have noticed that.
And he does that in every theater. He talks about how human beings are affected by it, you know, whether it's vaccines or Medicaid or Medicare. He's always thinking about how this impacts the little guy. And, you know, the Democrats have him pegged as a guy who's sort of sitting, you know, in the cabinet meeting talking about how can we make billionaires richer. He's the opposite of that. He's a genuine populist.
So surprising, right?
Yeah.
A little bit surprising, because
that's interesting.
Well, at any rate, I think the bio people have their work cut out for them. And
yeah, these two have mutual respect.
They do,
other.
And they're up against a couple season pros, so it's going to be hard to drive a wedge here.
Yeah.
That was
it, sorry to interrupt. They've both been just totally slammed by the media.
Mm-hmm.
They've just people have tried to destroy their lives, their careers. I mean, remember when RFK Jr. was running and his his cousin came out and just
gross family,
awful,
just disgusting,
just
awful,
mean,
awful.
Terrible. Things that they said about him, all because he holds a different point of view from them. Like, it's just shocking. So I think these guys would be harder to break than you think.
I do too, especially after hearing that felt genuine to me. And by the way, you could tell from the green subtitles, I forgot to source where I got this from. This that's obviously from Vigilant Fox at over on X. When you see those green subtitles, I love how Vigilant Fox pulls all these things together. So normally I would put the link down, forgot to do it this time, so I'm saying it out loud. All right. And by the way, just a quick announcement, a little PSA. We have two really important pieces at Peak Prosperity last week. One is about brain fog and what it means, and all, you know, I just identified that I've been experiencing some brain fog of late. And so a lot of other people have as well. We're trying to figure out, run a proper differential, meaning what are the possible causes, and we would stack those, and people weighed in with all their experiences. I think you can see there's the time of this, where I pulled it up, 188 comments, very thoughtful comments. We got really rich conversations there. But the companion piece to that also put out on Friday, because on Fridays I do usually a big 1-2 punch. And last Friday's, which was June 27th, I also wrote, if we're lucky, we've got two more years. And it's about AI and where we are in the AI story and all of that. And so this is what we talk about with brain fog. If you're experiencing anything that looks like any of this stuff, you're going to want to come by and see what we're talking about.
Do you want me to read that so people that are just listening can hear?
No, very quick. I just didn't want to spend a whole lot of time on this. I want to let people clue them in. There's something going on there, but it includes forgetfulness and mental fatigue and confusion and stuff. By the way, Larry the Logger wrote this here. Just the yellow part, please.
Yeah. In response to you saying, it turns out it's not just me. Many others are reporting similar issues, struggling with memory, focus, and even simple word recall. To which he responded, damn it, exactly. I thought it was just me. Words like wrench, bolt, gate, rosemary have escaped me. Words I use all the time, totally gone. People I've known for years can see their faces, names, gone. Drive to the end of our driveway to turn and get onto our road. Completely forgot where I was going. Thank you. I'm slow on the uptake enough without outside things making me yet slower. Answers a ton of WTF is going on even during mundane things.
Yeah, so it turned out to be much more widespread than I thought. Although I had clues that it was.
I thought it was just me too. I have the same issues
fairly
sometimes.
Yeah.
I bet a lot of people can relate to that.
Yep. All right. Up next, we're going to talk about this section here, which is Trump takes on Massey and Elon, and it's pretty impressive thing that's going on there. But first, we're going to hear from Peak Financial Investing.
The markets are a ticking time bomb. Volatility is spiking, trade wars have broken out, and most investors are sleepwalking into disaster. Many portfolio strategies perform poorly during times like these. At Peak Financial Investing, however, we don't gamble with your future. Our registered investment advisory connects you with battle-tested wealth managers who reject outdated models and embrace active management, strategies proven to navigate chaos, and who aren't afraid to discuss things like the great taking, or maybe the importance of protecting your wealth with gold. Without the right approach and with the wrong advisor, you're risking, well, everything. Don't wait for the crash to act. Visit peakfinancialinvesting.com right now to schedule a free consultation and discuss your particular situation. Take control of your wealth before the markets take it from you. Again, that's peakfinancialinvesting.com, and I'm Dr. Chris Martinson, urging you to act now.
Obviously, we have our fingers in a lot of pies here at Peak Prosperity. That's the kind of guy I am. I'm very much a Renaissance individual. All things connect to all things, and I like to see how all the pieces fit together. But we are coming into one of the most extraordinary periods of change, some of it positive, a lot of it negative, unfortunately. AI is going to be not a transformational technology, it's disruptive. So that's captured a bunch of our focus of late, how that's going to disrupt things. But as well as you know, if you've been following me long enough, we have to understand where we are with respect to resources, oil and copper and things like that, maybe bees now too. It's all part of it, but also maybe our own emotional and cognitive capabilities or inabilities, depending on how things are. There's something in the air. There's something is happening. Mm-hmm. Could be stress.
Right.
It could be somebody just posted and said they have similar symptoms because of Lyme. Could be Lyme.
Right.
Could be that COVID was a bioweapon and it actually caused, you know, issues that we're just now uncovering. It could be 5G. We don't know.
I don't know.
We don't know.
I hope
curious.
Somebody finds out though. I have terrible tinnitus right as we speak.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I can barely like concentrate. It's just constant.
All right, let's turn here now for our last segment here. Again, another cat fight going on.
All right, so between Donald Trump and Thomas Massey and Elon.
Yep.
Well, I guess it's between Elon and... Anyway.
Yes.
I don't know. It's getting crazy.
Well, Trump is unhappy with Massey because Massey doesn't like his big, beautiful bill.
Right.
And so then he goes after him and says this, you know,
right.
Which is... Yeah.
New poll. Anybody I endorse beats Thomas Massey of Kentucky by 25 points. Get ready. Massey is a very bad
guy. Is a very bad guy. Not Bibi Netanyahu, not Randy Fine.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, that's a interesting.
Not Lindsey Graham.
For that label.
Thomas Massey is a very bad guy. Well, then what is the, what are those other guys? Must be literal demons, I guess.
Exactly.
Well, they probably already are. But so this was Elon in September of 2024. So this is before the election. Like he's concerned about what anybody should be concerned about.
America is also going bankrupt extremely quickly. And nobody seems to, everyone seems to be sort of whistling past the graveyard on this one. You know, the Defense Department budget is a very big budget. Okay. It's $1 trillion a year, DOD Intel, it's $1 trillion. And interest payments on the national debt just exceeded the Defense Department budget. But they're over $1 trillion a year,
mm-hmm.
just in interest and rising. We're adding $1 trillion to the net, to our debt, which our, you know, kids and grandkids are going to have to pay somehow every 3 months. And then soon it's going to be every 2 months and then every month. And then the only thing we'll be able to pay is interest. And if this is, it's just, you know, it's just like a person at scale that has racked up too much credit card debt. This does not have a good ending. We have to reduce the spending.
He sounds surprisingly just like me. I've been saying that stuff for years.
Know.
Same stuff, right?
He does.
It's fractal. If you can't make this balance at a household level, it doesn't magically balance because we add all the households together.
No,
if you
doesn't.
Have too much debt and it's growing faster than your income, you have a problem mm-hmm. on your hands. It's a math problem.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about the compounding function. You know, we're doing $1 trillion every 3 months, and then it'll be every 3 weeks, and then every 3 days, and then every 3 hours, right? Like he's talking about the Venezuelization.
That's right.
Of all of this. That's
right.
The path we're on. So he cared about this a long time ago, right? So this is, mm-hmm. He just retweeted that and he said, basic math. Okay. Now Trump is really mad at him for pointing out this basic math right now. Really mad.
Yeah. It seems America's that awesome. Way.
Well, how mad? I mean, this is astonishing. Like this is a bit of a 2 a.m. screed or whatever it is. But
is that what time it came in?
I don't actually know.
Donald Trump said, Elon Musk knew long before he so strongly endorsed me for president that I was strongly against the EV mandate.
Oh. So Trump is trying to make it sound like he's like, Elon's just mad at me because the big, beautiful bill takes the EV, $7,500 per car credit out.
Right.
So he's trying to say, Elon's just mad at me for reasons everybody can understand. I'm taking money away from him.
Right. That it's
and Elon
money.
Back in September in earlier in 2024 said, yeah, take the mandates away. We don't need them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, go for it. He didn't like that wasn't it. But anyway, so now he's trying to make it about that, make it sound like it's about money.
Mm-hmm. It is ridiculous and was always a major part of my campaign. Electric cars are fine, but not everyone should be forced to own one. Elon may get more subsidy than any human being in history by far. And without subsidies, Elon would probably have to close up shop and head back home to South Africa.
Go home. We don't want you and your rocket launches, satellites, internet.
No more rocket launches, satellites, or electric car production in our country would save a fortune. Perhaps we should have Doge take a good hard look at this. Big money to be saved. Wow.
Oh, so he's going to turn Doge back on him. So the reason that Elon is pissed, and I think he has every right to be pissed. So he didn't have to do this. He was just happily being a billionaire, and he's a doer. Right? I'm gonna make cars, rockets, boring tunnels, internet, satellite all across the world. He's just a doer.
Mm-hmm.
So he sets all that aside. He torches his personal brands. Because the liberals got fired up to hate him, and Trump didn't do anything to back him up on right?
True.
They didn't go after the people funding all of the hate Elon campaigns. So he torches his personal brand, sleeps on the floor, puts everything up there, finds all this waste, fraud, and abuse, and they basically said, we're not going to use it.
Yeah.
And then turns back around and weaponizes Doge against him, potentially.
That's awful.
That's a betrayal.
That is a betrayal.
Full betrayal. So not one to deal with betrayal lying down as a person who's a doer. He
said, is it time to create a new political party in America that actually represents the 80% in the middle?
5.6 million votes.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
I was one of those votes. I was in the blue. Up top, because
uh-huh.
I'm all
and
about.
What were the? I mean, it doesn't have numbers there, but I guess you can see that more people said yes than said no.
Well, 80% did, yeah. So.
Oh right.
80% said yes, and then Trump goes after Massey hard, and then next thing you know, Massey's like, "Oh, cool." He's got like donors showing up from all over the country now, you know, including a lot of metropolitan areas. So he doesn't just appeal to sort of rural folks.
Look at that. My campaign is fueled by the grassroots donors on this map. 3,417 of you donated $308,665 last week. Thank you.
What is that? Just to average just under $100. I mean, so that's pretty good. I mean, it's grassroots, right? $100, 3,400 people. So he gets a bunch of money. It's gone way up since then.
That's awesome.
And
Elon says every member of Congress who campaigned on reducing government spending and then immediately voted for the biggest debt increase in history should hang their head in shame, and they will lose their primary next year if it is the last thing I do on this earth. And to which Justin Amash says, please support Thomas Massie. The establishment is working to primary him because he's a genuine fiscal conservative and opposes the big bloated scam. And Elon says, I will.
So boom. That's done. Mm-hmm. And so what's fascinating is that this isn't the first time that Trump has tried to primary or said he's going to primary Thomas Massie. So he tried primarying him in 2020. And so Josh Boehm said, hey, Grok, what happened last time Trump tried that? And Grok said, well, in 2020, Trump tried to primary Representative Thomas Massie after Massie opposed a $2.2 trillion COVID-19 free-for-all relief bill. I put the words free-for-all in there myself.
So this has been going on for a little bit.
Trump endorsed a challenger, Todd McMurtry, criticized Massie as a grandstander, which is he saying again this time. Massie won the Republican primary, squeaked by with a 81% of the vote. Tough guy. I don't need you to read all this next part, Evie. It's just, I'm just going to tell you that none of this, after all of this sort of came through, Trump just,
whoa,
he went on a wall of text. And I hate to say it, but that kind of looks like a 13-year-old who just got dissed by a boyfriend or something. He is mad. He calls him a grandstander. And
he's not MAGA. MAGA doesn't want him, doesn't know him, doesn't respect him. He's a negative force.
All that stuff.
Now, blah, blah, blah. He's a loser.
Now,
wow.
In my world, look, you can be, as president, perfectly can be unhappy with, you know, other politicians. But to take the position of the president to then personally go after a congressman is beneath the station of that office. It's like now you've just turned it into something else. So not a fan of that. But the way you handle this politically is you say, hello, America. Yeah, Thomas Massie and I, we have a few differences. Fortunately, we have far fewer differences than areas of agreement. We agree on a lot of things. We're going to come together. We're going to talk like adults. I'll tell him what I think. He'll tell me what he thinks. We're going to find a way through this, you know, something like that. That's what you do. You don't do this.
No, that is, it's not graceful at all.
Well, I just want to get back to this. I think we do need a third party, you know, and again, you know, our philosophy at Peak has always been, we're not left, right.
That's right.
We're up, down, right from wrong. I think Thomas Massie invariably just goes for what he thinks is right, not left, right.
No, he doesn't.
Right from wrong.
Yeah. He's oriented the same way we are, I think.
He just, and he's, a lot of our listeners, thinks for himself and says, this is what's best for America. Right. So, Poly Market, where you get to vote with dollars on are things going to happen, has been spiking of late. It's as of this morning, actually, when I just looked at it, it's up to 48% chance. And the idea.
The question is, will Elon Musk create a new political party this year?
So we're up to 48%. It's about a coin flip right now, but he may come up with a new political party.
Interesting.
Yeah. By the way, Cat Turd is very much over here on the just, you know, Donald Trump or the highway. Anything about Donald Trump is amazing. And so to that thing you just read out about, he wrote, bam. So I wrote, this makes Trump look petulant and small. There's no bam here. It's just sad. Right. And Kay said, what's that?
Trump could have just agreed to disagree with Massie and Rand and be allies on about everything else.
Yep. That would be the right way to go about this.
Yes.
I think. Yeah. I think so. So I don't know. I don't know. But you want to see where it really jumped the shark?
Yeah. Of course.
Literally, Trump said this.
What? He'll have to take a look at deporting Musk? What? No. Oh, man.
Isn't that crazy?
That is nuts. I don't know. Is that really true? I guess.
At any rate, so now we have to contrast, which Trump are we talking about? The one who's empathetic and loves music and cries during music and,
right.
and you know, it is very thoughtful and curious? Or is it this guy who's clearly just sort of like unable to deal with challenges and turns to pure vindictiveness when challenged?
Yeah.
You know, which one are we dealing with here?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like he's kind of mercurial in his moods and how he does things, but anyhow.
Yep. Well, that is our show for today. So we get up to this amazing part, which is Adios Amoebas. But before we do that, Evie, of course, is going to close out the show with one of her famous readings.
I love this. It's called If. And it's so good. And I don't have the author of it. If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you, but make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting, or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating, and yet don't look too good nor talk too wise, if you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, if you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to broken and stoop and build them up with worn out tools, if you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it in one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings and never breathe a word about your loss, if you can force your heart and nerve and sinew to serve your turn long after they are gone, and so hold on when there is nothing in you except the will which says to them, hold on. If you can talk with crowds and keep your virtue, or walk with kings, nor lose the common touch, if neither foes nor loving friends can hurt you, if all men count with you, but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. And which is more, you'll be a man, my son. I think that's Kipling, actually.
Mm-hmm. It is. I clicked a couple because Rudyard, we had a few people Kipling. Pointing out that's Kipling, including
what I realized it. Like
I didn't get to
right at the beginning.
Bermuda Triangle grouper.
Yes. I love that poem so much. It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
See the brain fog. I had a brain fog.
So there it is.
Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. It's always a pleasure to spend these afternoons with you, and we hope you take good care of yourselves and each other, and we will see you again next week.
Indeed. Thank you very much, everybody, and come by Peak Prosperity, leave any comments you want, and we're always having a rocking good time over there. So for those of you who are subscribers, come on back and we'll keep the conversation going. For everybody else, have a great week. Thank you for being here, and we'll see you next week.